sir, the possibility of successfully navigating an asteroid field is approximately 3,720 to 1.
Never tell me the odds.
I'm Pete Mitchell. He's Peyton Jones. And this is the Church Planner Podcast.
Welcome back to the Church Planner Podcast. This is Peyton Jones, and I am on here today with Elliot Sands. He is the president of Faith First, and he's going to tell us a little bit about this ministry, and you'll see why I had him on here for you as church planners. You know this, when you plan a church, you know, if you listen to this podcast, you know that I'll often challenge you that your church planning partner is not some guy named Bob. Your number one church planning partner is your spouse. And your family is your primary team. They are making so many of the sacrifices you are making. Your church plant success rises or falls on your family. And if you don't take care of your family, not only are you stupid, you're also just blowing it. And listen, you're going to blow it so much as a church planter in so many other spectacular ways. Don't make your family the thing you blow it on. So I'm really excited to have Elliot on here today. Want you to get to know him. I had the privilege of meeting him through Mike Chong Perkinson, one of my mentors. You know him. And I'll tell you what, Elliot was cool enough just to reach out and say, hey, let's just talk. Let's just get to know each other. The second he got on here, we hit it off, man. Like, his posters on his wall behind him are all these cool band, like, shows. That's his. So you go to his website, and he talks about his ministry. And he talks all about music and shows. And fair enough, that's what he and I spent a good chunk of time talking
it's
about.
True.
He's one of us. He's a real guy. And he's got a cool, cracking ministry. He's going to tell you about it. But first, Elliot, welcome.
Thanks for having me. This is awesome. I am super stoked, and I love church planning. I've never been a church planner, but I have two brother-in-laws who have planted churches. My parents were missionaries, so when you talk about family, like if you ever want to dig into that, I can take a little bit of the experiences that my parents had as missionaries, and the three of us all had very different experiences living in Nigeria, not only because of our ages, but just what God did while we're there. So thanks for having me. This is awesome.
Yeah, man, I got to hear about that, because if I were on here with my co-host, he'd be like, slow down, Peyton. You're going to get into this record, and you're going to get into, you know, music and concerts, and then you're going to get into the ministry. But let's hear more about Elliot. So he would want to know your backstory. So give us kind of, I mean, that's a great place to start. I mean, missionary kid, that's the hotness right there. You were born into this.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll try to keep it short, but my grandfather was a pastor. He pastored for almost 40 years, and then my dad wanted to have nothing to do with ministry, and so he became a dentist. And about 15, 20 years into his dental practice, a missionary randomly showed up and invited my dad to go to Nigeria for a month, so he took me and my mom with him. And a year later, we were back on the field. So I did my last few years of high school in Jos, Nigeria. And I might cry if we talk about that, because seriously, in December, we're recording this in January. In December, I got to go back to my old high school that I had not been to since, I mean, I graduated in 1990. So, nice. But it's been 35 years since I've been there, and I never expected to go back. And God's just been unbelievable. He's always faithful, but just showing up and kind of desires your heart kind of stuff. So,
What was that like? I mean,
dude, it's just, first off, anytime you go back to a place you haven't seen in 35 years, things have changed just in the city and all of that and times and so on. But like going back to my high school, honestly, felt almost like a time capsule. Buildings are the same, you know, like everything's where it was. You go like the, you know, athlete of the year stuff, and there's my class amongst, you know, now 35 others after that. But just emotionally, God was so good. And with anything, there's highs, there's lows, there's goods and the bad. And so one of the things I really learned to grapple with was this idea that there was some pain that I know now that I didn't know then that was going on in my own family and then people, friends in school, just tragic stuff. And so I had to hold that at the same time holding this joyousness of returning back, seeing people that I didn't know still live there. And even connecting with people that my parents did ministry with and their kids and their grandkids. So anyway, I was emotionally just like taxed at the end from joy and you know, travel, of course. But anyway,
it was
really good.
Was there a kind of a sense of where when you went back, like people are like, wow, man, that was cool. You spent part of your life here to serve us. Like, was there some of that, like with your dad and stuff and your parents?
So remember, so I was a high schooler. So I left when I was 17, just turning 18. But, the family that hosted me and like amazing story that I even got to connect with them 2 years ago, we dropped our daughter off at Westmont College in Santa Barbara and, went to this little freshman orientation thing. This kid gets up, he starts talking, and I'm like, that kid went to the high school I went to in Nigeria. And totally like, let's put it this way. There's three of us that have gone from Hillcrest High School to Westmont, and me and his brother and him. So anyway, met him, hit it off.
Wow.
Long story short, my daughter, this last, you know, in November, I was already going to Nigeria, but I wasn't going back to where I lived. She runs into him on campus. He's like, well, if your dad wants to go to Jos, let me know. My parents would be happy to host him. So just again, God's faithfulness and showing up. Amazing that my daughter even told me, you know, I don't know if you have 20-year-olds, but like just the fact that she actually communicated with me that she had had that conversation was a miracle in and of itself. But one of the days we were there, a lady came over who my mom and dad both started Bible study fellowship classes in Nigeria. And the women's class my mom started is now, or has been for a long time, the largest class in the world. Tons of ministry going on there. And one of the ladies my mom served with came over to the house and greeted us and just said, or me, and just said, I want to tell you how impactful your mother's, you know, ministry was to me in my life and what's continued on in the last 35 years. So I did actually get that, but it was cool to actually see through the lens of people my parents served with.
Right.
You know, again, I'm a 16, 17 year old, right? So I did get a little ministry in there, but it was more four spiritual laws going down to the arenas and, you know, just trying to do the reading the track and see if somebody accepts Jesus kind of stuff. So,
wow, man. So that's some real like street cred for the kind of ministry you do now. And I think that's a perfect place to kick in. And don't worry, I'm bringing us back to the music. We're going to take an intermission. But like from that, knowing what you do ministry wise, I mean, brother, so few people have that experience. So tell us a little bit about Faith First.
Yeah, so Faith First, we're an organization that wants to help people overcome the divides, polarization in our society. That could be on the ethnic side of things for Sunday mornings, still a very, especially in the church, still a very divided time of the week, to what we go through during political seasons, what we go through around the holiday seasons in regards to the political season. And so we want to provide tools for people just to help overcome that and try to find ways. And so we actually just launched a new website and is just coming online, but it's called Live the Brighter Side, livethebrighterside.com. And basically, it's a website where we're going to have Christian writers, Mike Chong being one of them, but just talk about what it's like to live the Christian life today in our very sometimes confusing, but definitely complicated season that we are in right now. And so it's a super fun ministry. I do the podcast. So this is fun to be on the other side of the mic.
Yeah.
But the Live Faith First podcast. So yeah, that's who we are as Faith First.
Well, your podcast with Mike Chong Perkinson in today's political climate was amazing. Like I watched that and I was like, wow, because so often the lines are drawn for us, right? And we're told what to think, you know, depending on where you fall in a bipartisan country like America, I can just predict. You know, whether you're blue or red, I can predict what you're going to think about every single news item. It's pre-programmed. You're programmed to think that way. The independent thinking that is so rare and the, we start leaning into the prophetic, and I don't mean like Pentecostal. I mean more of like the heart of God kind of prophetic. That is the stuff that needs to break through. And I really heard that. If you guys haven't had a chance to listen to the Faith First podcast with Mike Chong Perkinson, strongly recommend you go. It is a masterclass on what Faith First does. But also, the reason that you being in Nigeria just so much lends itself to what you're speaking about is, for me, I fell into those predictable divides myself. And then I went as a missionary to live in Wales for 12 years. And of course, they got six political parties in the UK, right? When one party gets in, you have to have the shadow cabinet, which is made up of people from the opposing party, so that things still get done. The non-elected party still can raise their hand and say, we did this, we did this. The party in power can still kind of say, yeah, you know, we still got this done. They can. It's all about who takes credit, right? And so they work together, and you don't fall in. You still have your divides, but you don't fall into as much. There's a little more balance. And once you get out of that bipartisan addiction, which is what it feels like to people here, it becomes an addiction. Whatever news channel you're on, it's addictive. The talk radio, it's addictive. And you start kind of trying to figure out where God's heart is at on so many of these things. It's a game changer. Yeah. So yeah. I just, you know, how have you kind of felt like, with a ministry like Faith First, what has been your mission and how do you help people navigate through all that?
Yeah, and some of it's what you're talking about, which is how do we kind of break free of that partisan thinking? And it's challenging, especially if you really feel like your community is your political party. Because the moment you say, I actually like what our opposing, you know, party's president or so on did on this thing. Now it's as if you are abandoning your entire party because you liked one thing they did. And yet in life, we realize that nothing is ever that black and white. No group, no church does everything 100% perfectly the way we would love it done. And so even coming to that realization that can we move out of the black and white thinking and kind of just change our mindset, realizing that our guy might do something good and our guy or gal might do something that we dislike. And that's okay. Yeah. We still may hold on to our blue and red, but it's okay to admit that, you know, sometimes, in fact, that's one of the things I've heard people say is think of three things your party does not get right. And just going through that process, you're like, you know, and what, name three things the other party does get right. And just going through that process kind of helps us, you know, navigate through some of those thinkings. But to me, the biggest piece in all of this is that our primary allegiance is to Jesus. And so our political opinions ought to be subservient to Jesus. Even if you want to say Jesus is informing my politics, and yeah, hopefully he does, even so, the emotions related to who we're connected with primarily should always be Jesus. And then if politics or identity or whatever it is starts to filter under Jesus, then we don't hold that same emotional, I got to fight you, I got to bring you on my side, I got to argue with you. Because the only thing I'm going to talk to you about with a little bit of passion, a lot of bit of passion, is Jesus. Beyond that, hey, believe what you believe, man. Let's have a conversation. If this gets heated, you know, that's okay, but I don't need to engage that way, because my primary is with Jesus. And so that helps really for me inform like how we navigate all of this. And unfortunately, and it's easy to do, it gets flipped around often, especially around election seasons, where like now it's not about my party and not Jesus as much.
I think people are not perhaps as leaders as aware of the different views within their congregation as they might think. And I would say that because it's really interesting. I work for North American Mission Board. And back, you know, a number of years ago, about 10 years ago. And if you were talking to white Southern Baptists, they were all right-leaning Republican. If you talked to Southern Baptists of color, they were all left-leaning Democrats, and almost to a man, you know, and you would just see it go that way. And I remember thinking, everybody thinks of the Southern Baptists as right-wing, and they actually were a bigger denomination they were the most ethnically diverse denomination in America at that time, not in the world. That would be the Anglicans, believe it or not. But there were more people of color in the Southern Baptists than there were white, and they just get, you know, labeled as right-wing Republican. So the interesting thing is that I think if you apply that to a congregation, not a denomination, but picture a congregation, I mean, particularly if you're a church planter, you're not finding people in pre-drawn lines. You are reaching people completely outside the family of faith, and you have no idea what's sitting. And I think with COVID, that's where leaders kind of woke up to, oh, wait a second, this is complex. The number of churches that took a beating from their people, because like you said, you know, like there were complex issues going on there, and people, you couldn't just go one direction or the other. I mean, so many congregations lost half their people because there was more diversity within political views than I think many churches realize. And that kind of leads to my question here, which is, I just stated it. Look, it's really crucial for church leaders to understand the message of faith first. And I think COVID proved that out. I was about to try to do a segue into a question, but I was leading. I was like, yeah, dude, you just set
just
that
make
up.
The statement.
Yeah, I'm just going to make this statement. Super important for leaders today. And how have you seen that, Elliot, play out in the lives of the leaders that you're talking to?
Yeah. Well, and I think it could be challenging because we want to navigate our cultural moment in a really healthy way. And we want to give our people great things to hold on to around all kinds of subjects that are challenging right now. I mean, politics being a big one, but sexuality is a huge one. Hey, how do we navigate this well? How do I get up? And I'm from San Jose, California.
Yeah.
So as far as, you know, liberal, you know, all of that stuff, yes, this is a bastion of, although we are the Bible Belt of the Bay Area. You know, you go up to San Francisco and up to, you know, Mill Valley and all of that, and it actually gets less Christian. And I think the challenge is, as a leader, we often want to make a stand and say, this is what you need to think. This is what you need to believe. This is, and that can be great on some things, but I think one of the bigger things, more helpful things, is how do we teach our people to think about all of these subjects. Yes. How, so that they're not coming to church on Sunday morning saying, this pastor, you know, pastor, what do you think about this? Okay, that's what I'm going to believe too. But rather, like, how do we process our moment and what each individual's conclusion comes to might be different. But if they've right. processed it faithfully through the scriptures, through the word, thought through it, the truth is you can land on different places and still Absolutely. Be right or wrong. Absolutely. Maybe that's the wrong word. Maybe it's not a right or wrong, but you can still land on a same place and be still in line with the scriptures, still in line with what God would think, even though we might disagree on exactly how something plays out. And so I think for a church planner, that's your biggest challenge, not to... Because you'll tend to isolate people. People won't come back because. But you also need to step in a way that actually gives people an opportunity to, you know, kind of create their Christian ethic. So, I think that's the way I'm going to answer that today. So, kind of as church planners,
it's a great answer,
how do we
brother.
Help people think through all of these challenging subjects, rather than just telling them, "Hey, here's what I believe, and I think you should believe the same."
Yeah, and that was the right answer. Just to completely contradict what Elliot just said, you know, like, that's how you need to think, you know, like, right. honestly though, brother, like that, I love that because you're telling everybody, hey, our differences will exist among you, you know, yes. like that's okay. Paul says that, he acknowledges that. And here's kind of the cool thing is the church is meant to wrestle through stuff, right? Like if you go back, like, I mean, go back to the New Testament, right? Like, they're like, okay, all these Gentiles are coming in, the Jerusalem Council. They argued and debated about things for days in a healthy way. Now, granted, you know, you look back and you think, man, this is the, like people's salvation is hanging in the balance. And rather than Jesus popping up like a mystical genie, like I dream, ding, you called master, you know, Jesus doesn't appear in the room and say, guys, this is a weighty matter. He lets his people work it out. And then Luke writes this, it seemed good to us and the Holy Spirit that, and then they have those list of three things. I love the fact that the Lord allows his people to wrestle through complex issues and teaching them to think, like you said, like our people don't know how to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And to do it in a biblical lens, through a biblical lens. We really, our society teaches us well how to navigate through things from kind of a cultural lens, which I think has a place in all of this, but the ultimate lens has to be looking at this through the Bible and what God has taught us. And I love that you bring up the early church, because I think one of the interesting things about the Bible is that we don't see it in color. We see it in black and white. In other words, the print there. I don't know, when I read names, I don't know the origin of the names. Is that a Greek name? Is that a Hebrew name? Is that a slave name? You know, any of those things. But if you start to go back and see who were the people in the church, you see that it was a totally diverse,
totally
ethnically, yep. totally diverse, politically not so much, because there really was only one, you know, party.
Yeah, you had one political party. That was Caesar. He claimed to be a god. You're supposed to say he was the Lord, not Jesus. Right. But
but economics, right? You're going to have wealthy people and literal slaves, people who, you know, and they're all there together worshiping God and making decisions for what the church is going to do and how they're going to reach out in their communities and what that's going to look like. And so if you think that an aristocrat and a slave can sit in the same room and think the same, of course they do.
Yeah.
But through the power of the Holy Spirit, binding people together, going through the process, the church can struggle through this. I think the challenge too is we so often like to label people as soon as we find something out. Oh, you're a. And then we just kind of cut them off. And so that labeling thing is really tough in the church, because I think it isolates people and, oh, that's that party, we're not going to, versus realizing that everybody is so nuanced and they may believe on a certain subject one thing. But if you think that person is only a Democrat, only a Republican, and that describes all of them, you're leaving so many other pieces of their person. They just become flat. They don't actually become 3D. And so,
you know, and that's the thing, like you mentioned about like the gay thing. You could all you want, like, you know, go super conservative on that. And in your congregation, people are like, but that's my brother. And that's, and theologically, they don't maybe have a problem with what you're saying, but maybe you're being a jerk about it. You know, the way you're talking about it, and you're stepping on across love lines for people. Like, we just, you know, and this is what I love about Jesus, because Jesus had the right wing conservatives, the Pharisees, and the left wing liberals, the and here I go using labels, but the Sadducees. And they're both trying to see whose side he's on. Like, they try to trap him. And there's this whole thing where they're each, like, you know, placing their bets, you know, who's going to, which side is he for? And Jesus is like, neither. Like, he gives them these brilliant answers that just blow them both out of the water. And he refuses, like how he says, you know, this generation's like a bunch of kids, like, hey, we played the tune for you and you wouldn't dance. Jesus wouldn't dance.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Well, and his own disciples, he got a zealot.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about, like, literally wants to overturn the government. Yeah. And you have a tax collector who literally has sidled up with the government. Then you have some fishermen. Like, you don't even know what their political leaning is, other than I'm just trying to make it through the day. And of course, so like you just have these 12 people come together, different mindsets, different backgrounds, different political affiliations. And somehow they managed to start the church.
Yeah.
Like, so the 12 that he chose, and then 11, and then we'll add a 12th in, you know, kind of as a, you know, aside there in Acts. But like, those very diverse group of people, those are the ones who started our church. You know, those are the ones who launched all of this out. Jesus didn't go and like, I am only going to have working class, or I'm only going to have executives, or I'm only going to have, and he just brought them all together. And then
he did.
How a zealot and a tax collector figured it out, I do not know, because in our own day and age, can you imagine? anyway, it's a beautiful picture for us, though, and a reminder that our churches should look diverse. And when I say diverse, I know we often think ethnically, and yes, please, but also of all other persuasions of diversity. I think should be sitting in our churches. We should be attractive enough so that everybody comes in and says, there's something about these folk that I'm curious. And even if they don't buy in, we're not isolating ourselves from them. We're not kicking them out the door by the stuff that we're saying.
Well, and it's funny you say that. When I planted a church in urban Long Beach, and when I say urban, I mean downtown, like, if anyone here knows Long Beach, we're talking like 7th and Cherry. Those are two of the main, you know, intersections there at the heart. And I remember we had this core team, and it was called Refuge Long Beach, but it was from a large church kind of well-known in Southern California called Refuge Huntington Beach. Pastor was Bill Welsh. And this core team that we formed to plant in the next city over, which the Orange Curtain is what they call it, Orange County, where it's all Republican. And, you know, we were going past that into LA County, like just literally driving across a major street, and you were going to be now in LA. And it was like the politics shifted, like on a dime. And I remember talking to this core team during our core team formation. I said, I need you guys to think of this as like a war. When you go to war, you can't bring your pets, right? You don't get to bring dogs or Terry the Terrapin Tortoise. You know, you don't bring your fish, right? You can't take that, you know, to battle. And Jesus, you know, kind of talked about taking ground and kingdom invading. And we're here to see the kingdom of God invade. So I need you to leave your politics on the other side of that orange curtain. If you can't do that, you're going to screw this up, because the kingdom of God will not align with any political party. I know you wanted to. It's like my co-host, Pete. Pete always says this. He says, and I think he's quoting someone, but he says, 2,000 years ago, Jesus told his followers that his kingdom was not of this world. And they've been trying to prove him wrong ever since, right? And so we just, you know, but we had this thing, and it worked. People That's awesome. Found all of a sudden they could grab onto the kingdom of God. Yeah. Because I honestly believe, brother, that what we're looking at often is because people don't know how to do the thing we were taught to do, which is make disciples. Like you said, the political party becomes your community. I thought you said that really well earlier. It's a substitute. I'm going to bring the kingdom of God through the kingdom of man, right? I'm going to bring it this way. And it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I, you know, and you said it when you spoke to about the Pharisees and the Sadducees, but, you know, just so we're clear, Jesus is not a Democrat and Jesus is not a Republican.
No.
He's for everybody in that party,
yeah.
Whichever yeah. party you're opposed to, and the ones that feel fringy, he's for yeah. everybody there.
Yes.
And, for me, again, it goes back to, are we putting Jesus first? Is Jesus yeah. a priority in all of this? And if it remains there, then I think it really helps reorder our own kind of emotional connection with all of the other things that identify who we are.
Yeah. And I think, you know, to go back to music, and this is my segue back into music here. You know, if right wings are like Southern rock and, you know, left wing is, let's say, prog rock, that means Jesus is punk rock, right? That's yes. what we're saying. He doesn't fit Absolutely. Either one of those. He's punk rock. And that leads me into the fact that I just met Johnny Rotten a couple weeks ago, which is like shaking hands with a legend.
Amazing.
And an icon all at the same time. So we got to talk music for a second because
okay, let's do it.
I can't do you like that, Elliot. I can't have you on here. We don't talk actual music. Before we do that, I just want to ask, where can they find Faith First? And one last thing is, what message of encouragement would you give to these church planters that are a little overwhelmed by the cultural moment?
Yeah. So find our the podcast you'll find on YouTube. At the Live Faith or at Live Faith First podcast. So just look us up there. And so that's the best place to find the podcast. And our website is Live Faith First as well. So you'll find all of our stuff there. And then Live the Brighter Side. That is our new kind of, I'm going to call it our news outlet. It's not news in some sort of like breaking news kind of way, but kind of more of a, you know, how do we get messages out to people? So there's your URLs for you. Yeah, and a word of encouragement. What I would say is keep going. Life's discouraging. We've all had our ups and downs. I've been through it in ministry and continue to persevere through. And this last season, since the beginning of September, kind of to the present, the word that stayed in my heart is God's faithfulness, and just the stuff that he has shown up and done over the last 4 months are extraordinary, kind of mind-blowing to me. Not that God is not good when things aren't going my way, but he has just been so present and faithful. And so perseverance, faithfulness, those are kind of the two words that I would give you, that your day may be bad today. Keep going with God in it. And he is faithful, even when it doesn't feel like it's a faithful season from God.
That's awesome. All right, guys. So it's the Live Faith First podcast. Yes. And you can check that out. But all right, Elliot, if I go Let's to your website, elliotsands.me, I noticed that on there you have all kinds of cool stuff about like best shows you ever went to, top bands. And then you said, you know, ones that you didn't, like great regrets. And you and I talked about this on our first call. All right, let's talk about some of the greatest shows you've ever been to. Like, come on.
Okay. Come here. Okay. The best show, the best showman, the best show, Prince. hands down.
Yeah.
Not a, and I got to admit, so my wife was a huge Prince fan, is still a huge Prince fan. And she got free tickets through work and said, hey, let's go. And I actually turned her down at first. I'm like, I don't need that. Cause I kind of remember the season in the 90s where it was just MF this and MF that and all of that whole season of his career. And I'm like, I just don't need that. Like, no, thank you. Not that I'm against saying bad word. I mean, I guess I am, but my ears aren't that sensitive. They wouldn't be bleeding, but I didn't feel like it. I was like, look, just go to the show with me. And we were going with friends. I'm like, that is fine.
Yeah.
And hands down, and I've seen, I don't know, hundreds of shows. I've seen Pearl Jam in the 90s. I've seen the Grateful Dead. I've seen Allman Brothers. And, you know, anyway, you go through
I've seen them live.
All of them. Great. And hands down, Prince. And then second, my wife won tickets to see him a second time up in Oakland. Ooh. So we saw him once in San Jose, once up in Oakland, both time amazing
both
shows.
Both times mind-blowing. So
amazing shows.
I have heard musicians I deeply trust, and they've said the same. Best ever live performance.
He's funny. Like, he had a sense of humor where, like, he's cracking jokes and he sends the band off and he's over at the drums and over the keyboard. Like, anyway, great show. Super fun. Another great show. I mean, Grateful Dead, especially with Bob Weir passing. I was able to see The Dead with Jerry Garcia a number of times back in the 90s, nice. Actually once at the Forum down in LA.
Yeah.
Anyway, super, super fun shows. It's just The Dead are their own vibe, man.
I have Grateful Dead pants made by 686 and they got the little bears on the inside of the cuffs if you roll them out, you know, like
so that's pretty awesome. Cool. That is awesome. I love that. One more I'll throw out there. I saw Pearl Jam 93 at the Polo Grounds in Indio.
Whoa.
And that was back in their phase where they were totally against Ticketmaster. So they had to find a non-Ticketmaster venue. And so, you know, and getting down to Indio is that's no joke. It's hot. And it was an evening show, thankfully, but still it's Indio. Desert's desert, man. And people were hucking shoes at the band.
Oh.
So, you know, and I wasn't that close but you see shoes going up and Eddie Vedder's getting all ticked off.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So they walk off stage. They try to make fun of it, you know, and kind of make light of it. And then, you know, I think Eddie gets hit up the side of the head and then they go off stage and they come back and they put all of their gear cases in front. But I do remember at one point Eddie's like, if you ever catch an MF going out with only one shoe, beat the hell of him on the way out. So I had both my shoes on. I did not get beat up that night. But if I were the guy with one shoe, I'd be hucking my other shoe too.
Heck right? Yeah, man. Heck yeah. Gosh. That's crazy. Yeah, people throwing bottles. People, I don't get that. But, you know, so my favorite band is, I've got a few, but one of my top bands, and they're, like, getting huge right now, which is, it's kind of like I've been a Seahawks fan all my life, and they may go to the Super Bowl, and that's a little vindicating, you know, because, you know, they didn't win for a long time.
I'm a 49ers fan, but I'm going to tell you, right now, Seahawks, best team in the league. That just right now, the way they played the last month and a half, best team in the league. Right. I got beat twice by y'all, but you know, anyway.
Wow. And I'm telling you, brother, like this is how I feel with the Deftones. I've been made fun of for years. Oh, are they still around? You know, because Chino Moreno's 52, same age as me, right? And so the funny thing is that they just had their 30-year-old album Around the Fur just make top three on the charts. Because of TikTok. Like all the, I wear anything Deftones. Almost all my clothes are like some band I like, right? And I walk around and it's funny because my daughter's 17 and she just laughs because all the young people think I'm cool. Because I'm like OG. And they're like, dude, nice shirt. Hey, man, I love your shirt. I like your hat, you know? And I always just look at my daughter like, see, I told you I'm cool. Right. It's just coming to fruition now. Like
right.
It's evidence. Finally. It's been in the bud a long time. But anyways, all right. Before we go, greatest regrets. And I hate to end on a downer.
So New Year's Eve, 93, 94.
This is painful. I can tell. Like, this is hurting.
It is. It's painful. It's kind of embarrassing. I don't do regrets. Like, that's not my jam. I don't do regrets. Yeah,
there's
but
a box of Kleenex too if you need it. Like, we
so,
provide that.
Thank you. Thank you. So there were two shows going on in the San Francisco Bay Area that I was aware of and wanted to go. One was a small up-and-coming band, Counting Crows. They were playing at the Hard Rock in San Francisco. Their single, Mr. Jones, had just come out, hitting the radio waves. I'm like, it was like a fun song, like a really good song when it first came out. I mean, it's still fun, but like, it was a good song. And so Hard Rock, small venue, Counting Crows, early. All right. Across the bay at the Oakland, I think it was at the Coliseum. It was definitely in Oakland. Nirvana was playing.
Ouch.
Now, Nirvana had come out with, their last album. And I liked it. I really liked it. But, you know, it kind of met with critical, like, how is this album? What's this about? Eat My Cancer. I don't know what all this is.
Yeah.
And so there were three or four of us sitting around and we were debating back and forth. And we chose Counting Crows. And then a few months later, Kurt was gone.
Yeah.
And it's like, you always kind of think like, oh, I'll see him next time around. You know, they'll tour again.
Yep.
But you should have known because he was already stuff going on in Europe, ODing. We weren't quite sure what happened there, but there was already like stuff was going on with Kurt. We should have known better that this wasn't going to last long, that this was going to be. But, you know, in the moment, you're never thinking Kurt wasn't going to be with us, you know, for however long. And so, so that is like really a life regret. I'll be honest with you. I mean, as far as like, but you make the decision, best decision you have with the data you have in the moment. And,
you do, brother. And I tell you what, I know there's a lot of good stories where you're like, I'm glad I went to that one. Boy, that was in time. But, my good story would be when I chose the Eagles over the Foo Fighters, playing in London, one in Twickenham and one in Wembley on the same night, and I had to make a decision. I chose the right one. But my greatest two regrets would be Bowie. Never saw him live, and am a huge fan. And number two would be the Police when they reunited just briefly, and I was a missionary, and I was too poor, but I should have made that happen. If I had to pick a third, Jeff Buckley. Because I could have seen Buckley so easily.
Well, he had to play like Roxy. Like, he had to play like L.A. Were you in L.A. at the time when he was touring?
I was in Huntington Beach. I mean,
okay.
You know, I mean, shoot, man. Like, yeah, it that's a painful one. Because I was a Buckley fan when Grace first came out. I was an early adopter because I was part of Columbia House Music. And they gave me, you know, these CDs for 1 cent. And I loved the name. And I thought the cover was cool. And I bought it. I'm like, oh, who's this? Never heard of him before. Became a avid fan of Jeff Buckley.
Yes. Would you stop and just tell people just for a moment what it was like to be part of those 1 cent clubs? And how many times did you quit and then restart so that you could get 10 CDs for a buck?
Do people even know what this is anymore?
Because it's not...
Yeah. And then you had to buy it. And then you're like, it was like the mafia was like you were in bed with loan sharks because $24.99 for a CD was a lot of money and you had to do it X amount of times.
And if you didn't cancel, they just kept showing up.
Yeah, dude.
I mean,
but when you first got that grid and all those pictures were on and you first, oh, you were so excited, you're taking the boxes. And then when that package came, you're like, yes. And it was great. But
and it was a fat stack. I mean, you got a box of brand new music. And y'all don't realize $15, $20 for a CD, that was not on our budget. Like, I mean, I'm an 18-year-old. I'm a 15-year-old. I can't afford that. And I can get like... Was there stickers? Was it ever like a pull out like the stamp?
Yes.
Like and you licked it on.
That's that right? Grid. That grid, and you would peel them off. Boom, and you'd stick them in that little window. You know.
Yes.
These are my six, and then they had a bonus. They're like, oh, would you like a bonus one? And there was some deal with that. And you're like, yes, I would. And you pop that in there too. Oh, man, I'm telling you, Elliot.
But you knew you were making a deal with the devil for some some degree. You knew because you were dirty. Paying for it.
Oh, yeah, you felt dirty. You felt, you looked over your shoulder like, is anyone seeing this? Because I know I shouldn't be doing this. And then with shaking, trembling hands, you dropped it in the mailbox and anticipated that package. And you knew, though, I'm going to pay for this. It was I would gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today. It was totally wimpy. Mm-hmm. And which we were raised on that kind of economy. It was, you know, we were taught that by Papa. Yeah. But man, it has been great having you on the podcast. My guest has been Elliot Sands. He represents Live Faith First. Definitely check him out and listen to that podcast we mentioned earlier and sign up and subscribe. Thanks for joining me and Elliot on the Church Planner Podcast. This has been Peyton Jones, and I'll see you next time.